Hello everybody, I'm George Tyler, thanks for coming back to my channel. This is about Andy Burnham. So on Thursday, as I predicted, Andy Burnham became a leader of the Labour Party unopposed. So a high majority of Labour MPs nominated him, over 80%, enough socialist societies or affiliated trades unions. So on Thursday, that ceremony, when he was officially announced as the leader of the Labour Party, Sir Keir Starmer is the Prime Minister for the moment, but no longer leader of the Labour Party. So they decided on Monday, Sir Keir will go to Buckingham Palace, formally tender his resignation to His Britannic Majesty, and his final act of Prime Ministerial advice will be for His Gracious Majesty to send for Mr. Burnham and ask him to form a government. And Burnham will get the phone call minutes later, go there. So for scintilla temporis, there is no Prime Minister. And then the expression is kiss hands. Apparently they haven't actually kissed hands, kissed the monarch's hand since the 1960s. All right. So Burnham said a big inspiration to him was Neil Kinnock, the leader of the Labour Party from 1983 to 1992, who led Labour into two electoral defeats. Burnham was a teenager then, growing up in Merseyside, very strongly Labour voting area. Part of the United Kingdom that was severely affected by Margaret Thatcher's economic policies, high unemployment, high crime, drug addiction, and so on. Even the Conservative Party is supposed to be tough on crime and fight against drugs. It was a battle that the Tory Party lost. So Andy Burnham is really trying to reheat Labour Party policies of the 1980s. So there's only been 40 years of Thatcherism. Hello, Burnham. A lot of that's been under Labour governments, of which you were part. Andy Burnham was a Labour MP from 2001 to 2016. He was in the cabinet under Tony Blair, the most right-wing Prime Minister Labour's ever produced, in the cabinet under Gordon Brown. And they continued Thatcherite policies. They did not reopen the coal mines. They did not seek to reverse privatisation. A collective ministerial responsibility. Burnham is as responsible for these policies as they are. All right, there's much joy in heaven over every sinner who repenteth. But would Burnham like to publicly apologise for the implementation of policies which he now considers to have been calamitous and so on? And now, I mean, even I hold Kinnock in high regard as an orator, a highly effectual and rousing public speaker. Back in the days when that was actually considered important in politics, sadly, when the sort of soundbite era. OK, so there he is, former mayor of Manchester, former cabinet minister. He's old enough, not too old. Is he 55? He looks rather more youthful. He jogs every day. He scarcely drinks. He doesn't smoke, all the rest of it. Happily married, no worries about that. He's got three grown-up children, married to a Dutch woman, partly the reason perhaps he's so Europhile, and so forth. He says he was brought up in Christianity, Catholicism, not particularly religious, all the rest of it. So how is he going to reverse these policies? Is he really going to take away the former council houses that are bought by people? Is he going to nationalize more things? He's talking about nationalizing water. Now, I'm not a free market fundamentalist. I'm open-minded on this one. Every country has some degree of public ownership. I'm not in principle opposed to nationalization. If you can convince me this is good value for money, if it'll produce better outcomes for most people, I have a prejudice against nationalisation. I'm a capitalist. But, you know, even under the most conservative government, Thatcher, there were some things which were publicly owned. It was a publicly owned and state-owned. She didn't nationalise, she didn't privatise the railways. That was her successor, John Major. She said privatising the Royal Mail would be going too far and things like that. Okay, so he said there's a cost of living crisis. So I don't know how you're going to control people's bills. He's against neoliberalism. He said it's been injurious to working class communities. But wait a second, they've got to own their own house. They didn't before, and you know they can get phones which they couldn't before. It took 2 years to get them installed when there was only one provider, British Telecom. They were able to buy shares and things like that. That is public ownership in a sense. If members of the public want to buy it, more of them can afford cars or computers or flights and things like that. Like when British Airways was publicly owned, supposedly run for the benefit of the public, it was far too expensive for most people to fly on. And that was privatized, and all these private airlines came along and they reduced prices drastically. And these things became within reach of the working class. So I don't completely buy the argument that it's wrecked everywhere. But yes, mass unemployment was definitely bad. All those people consuming wealth and not producing it. But now we have more and more people on benefits. Like 25% of adults in the United Kingdom registered disabled. That is preposterous. You think back to, say, two generations ago, when most people did physically demanding jobs in factories, farms, construction sites, shipyards, mines, and so forth. And yet the number of people in relative and absolute terms who were disabled was far, far lower. And now people who've got attention deficit hyperactivity disorder are disabled. ADHD means that if you find something boring, you find it boring. Now, don't we all? I know there's a spectrum on that. Some people have got a lower boredom threshold. Are they just being difficult? Control yourself. Tough. Grow up. That's life. You got to do it. Whatever happened to resilience, to self-control, and so on, just endlessly making excuses, a bit like Celia Walden's article in the Daily Telegraph last week. No, your child does not have special needs. He's just badly behaved. And sometimes they've got bad parents just being so soft, so pathetic. And do you think in growing economies like China or Japan or Taiwan or wherever it may be, or they don't have this pathetic attitude and we're just dishing out benefits, which is an ever heavier burden that's really crushing the working class, having to pay for those who refuse to work these personal independence payments. And all right, sometimes that might be valid for some people who are very disabled, but you know, they're blind people who work full-time, there are deaf people who work full-time, there are Down syndrome people who work full-time, we've got no qualifications whatsoever, they're permanently wheelchair-bound people who work full-time. I know some of these people, they're people with only one arm who work full-time, and all the rest of it. That people who've got mental illness have been in psychiatric hospital and they work full time. So this endlessly dishing out benefits, rights, throwing around rights like confetti, we can't possibly uphold all these rights. And that is crushing the workforce. And then people say, well, I'm a chump not to game the system, to claim to be disabled on the slenderest pretext. And I've read how people have to know to tell the right lies to get the benefits. And then more and more people on benefits is going to make it more and more difficult for those who actually work. Okay, so he's anti-Thatcherite, so he really wants to take us back to the 1970s with strikes, with a three-day week, with constant paralysis, all these so-called workers' rights, which make it almost impossible to employ people, all the employers' liability about health and safety and what counts as sexual harassment, and we can't have a Christmas party or really any work party, because if anyone ever says, I like you, do you want to go on a date, that's it, he, and it usually is a he, has to be sacked or something. There's a huge procedure and the employer is liable for that. If they socialize after work in a pub, it's still a work event. I mean, it's bloody impossible. And all these so-called reasonable adjustments they have to make for disabled people. And all right, some of them really were reasonable, like a ramp where you can, but it just goes too far. And this idea of number 10 North, just because you have an office in Manchester doesn't mean it's better for Northern England. Now, he wants their local mayors to be allowed to charge an income tax. I'm not necessarily against that, but take away the statutory duties, because then these local authorities, they've got so many things that they have to do. They've got almost no latitude. Give them some leeway. We are going to do this. We're not going to do that for you. Otherwise, they're just administering central government policy. Local government doesn't have a great deal of legitimacy because turnout is so low at about 30%. And we could have a real debate. If people say, we're offering you a low tax model of less in public services, others are offering you a high tax model, more extended public services, and let the public decide. That's what the logic of this deeper devolution would be, because there's asymmetric devolution in the United Kingdom. Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales, even London have got extensive devolution, but the rest of England does not. Okay. So anyway, sometime on Monday, he will become Prime Minister, First Lord of the Treasury and Minister for the Civil Service. So that's it. But he has got a number of real headaches to deal with. This unfunded promise to increase defence spending, about a £10 million savings in efficiency. Yeah, right. They all say that. No one ever comes near to achieving that. The so-called cost of living's crisis. I mean, you could live in a smaller house or whatever, just wear more clothes in the winter to stay warm at winter. Keep bus fares down. That might be good because, you know, getting people to work more effectively. I'm not sure what else he's going to do. He's going to move in a more Europhile direction. He might be audacious and say, we'll have a referendum on rejoining the European Union. That wouldn't bring the UK into the European Union. He could negotiate on that basis. I mean, legally, he's not required to. If he simply wants to get Parliament to vote to join the EU, he could do it if the European Union is willing to accept the United Kingdom. And that would appeal to a Eurosceptic segment of the population, which is large. But it would really help boost Reform UK, which otherwise is dipping. So he has got a number of difficulties. How is he going to stand up to his own party when we can't continue with this ballooning public spending problem with social care for people living longer, more and more elderly people, the NHS waiting lists scarcely coming down? That's a big problem. There are a lot of issues to be solved. These issues are not going to vanish simply because there's a new prime minister. Even though he's a bit more charismatic and so on, he could scarcely be less so than Sir Keir Starmer. He's got to come with a message of positivity. Labour now realises its fatal mistake was to be doom and gloom merchants. They wanted to increase taxes, so they had to say, oh, the books are worse, we've got this huge black hole, which is a complete lie because all the economic data was shared with them. So Rachel Reeves is largely responsible for tanking the economy. She's going to find another cabinet job. Everyone knows she's going to go as Chancellor Exchequer. Had Starmer kicked her out earlier and reversed some of her policies, he might have lasted rather longer. But yeah, Shabana Mahmood as Chancellor Exchequer is my pick. Angela Rayner as Health Secretary. Rachel Reeves will have maybe something minor. I don't know, Culture Secretary, Leader of the House of Commons. Unfortunately, Wes Streeting's going to be in there somewhere. What's he going to be like, Secretary of State for Transport, that he appeals to the moderate wing of the Labour Party? I think Burnham's not as left-wing as he pretends, but he said that partly to get it back in. Plus, the political centre ground in Manchester is further to the left than much of the United Kingdom. I realise that Labour's going to lose a lot of seats in southern England next time, but, you know, could still win in 2028, 2029, if things go right for Burnham. So going to be a wealth tax, land tax. I'm not necessarily against some of these, but the taxes are going to go up. I don't see any sense they're going to cut public spending, maybe shed a few civil servants, maybe slim down a recruitment freeze, maybe amalgamate some departments. That's not going to change things hugely. Maybe move some ministries out of London, but that'll take several years. So there are a lot of demands on him, but there's not a lot of fiscal headroom and can't keep borrowing. You know, the UK's national debt is 100% of GDP. You go back to 2000, it's 20% of GDP. So I think he'll maybe say strong statements, we're not going to fight against Iran under any circumstances. That'll play with the Labour Party and the general population. So yeah, there's not much to look forward to with Andy Burnham. I think he is the Scouse Starmer. Right, thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate to PayPal, georgecallan7@gmail.com. Goodbye.